There are a lot of times when I get all this energy and I just want to point my finger at you and see where you're wrong. I just want to be angry at you and find out where you're a jerk or where you're wrong. But what I really need to be doing is not pointing my finger at you, but looking at the possibility that I'm just trying to put myself at the center of the universe and unwilling to look at the sin in my own life.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a philosopher by training, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. He is currently on staff at Mackenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced in California and Oregon for over 20 years. She is employed by the Caris Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series, titled Being a Christian, Jack and Christine discuss the most important biblical concepts of the Christian life. Now, here are Jack and Christine.
You know, Jack, we started in life with having this egocentric view of ourselves, that we are the only people in the world and that all of our needs should be met. I'm not sure that we ever totally leave that developmental stage completely. For most of us, certainly me, it's very hard for me to look and understand and appreciate the needs of other people as much as I need and want and care about my own needs. And it seems to me that a big part of being a believer is God opening our eyes up to seeing that other people exist, that they're important, that they're as important as me, and to over time, not just voice other people are as important as me, but really live in that way. That is an incredible challenge, one that I'm still very much trying to meet.
Right, and the real key is, as you say, not just voicing it, but living that way. I mean, it's easy to voice it. In fact, it's very difficult not to voice it if we read the Bible at all. But living that way is incredible. We are just so instinctively self-centered. And for me to be willing to put other people ahead of myself, I mean, to step in line behind them and make sure that their needs are met or they are taken care of before me is just so counter to all of our instincts and all of our impulses.
Well, especially when it matters to me.
Right. Yeah, like, it's easy when I can take it or leave it.
Yeah, like when I'm being nice and let everybody jump into the cold pool first. I could look really altruistic, but the point is I'm just seeing if they die when they jump in, or, you know, so that I kind of rev myself up to go in also. But I think we do that a lot. We put other people first when it's easy. Mm-hmm. And when it really matters to me, like when there's a pot of gold at the end of that swimming pool, man, I'm going to dive in and swim as fast as I can. I'm not going to wait for you. So it's very difficult when I really want something to set myself aside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If there's some honor that we want, some glory that we want, some achievement that we want.
Some esteem from somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's a very big thing for us.
Yeah.
Getting esteem.
Yeah. Then we really see. If I really want it badly, then can I step aside and let someone else get it instead? You know, to the extent that the answer is no, I can't, then that's the sort of self-centeredness, the sort of center of the universe attitude that comes naturally to us, but that we are going to little by little gradually begin to transcend as we become sanctified.
You know where I see it coming out worst in me is my interactions with my family when there is some way that I'm going to look bad or be perceived as wrong or having done something wrong or in some way I'm threatened personally. I have a really hard time then listening to and caring about what somebody else is saying to me. And you know, I had a discussion with one of my children, and he was saying to me, Mom, I want you to listen, not just listen and hear what I say, because as a counselor, I can listen and hear what people say pretty easily,
But I want what I have to say, I want it to make a difference. I want it to be important enough to you that you, I think he was saying that you take a look at your own selfish attitudes and maybe even adjust to thinking differently about something. And sometimes I'm really good at that, but obviously from his angst about it, I'm not very good about that a lot. So that's a way that I don't succeed very well at making other people important. Mm-hmm. I'm there trying to protect myself. But being a Christian and going through the process of sanctification means that over time I become a person who's able to listen, who's able to love each other people and make what they say, what they want, as valuable as what I say and what I want. In other words, I ought to give them equal claim.
Exactly. That's the perspective that we will have to grow into as we become sanctified, is that this is a world that God created. This is His world. It belongs to Him. We were created to serve His purposes and to accomplish what He wanted to accomplish. And there's a lot of us.
Yeah, it's a lot of us.
He didn't just create a world with me. He created a world with a whole lot of human creatures that all have equal standing before God. We are not unimportant, but we are not so important that God has made the universe to revolve around us.
No, He hasn't made it to revolve around us. So you know what we do? We try to make it revolve around us.
Right, exactly. But as we begin to get this other perspective, we recognize that other people have an equal right to God's mercy, to God's blessing, to being prospered by God, to having good gifts come from God. I mean, where I really see my self-centeredness is in a kind of envy or jealousy, having to battle that. Seeing other people get something that I'm not getting some glory or esteem or fame or an achievement or something like that. And over the years, that's what I've had to really battle. In most recent years, my children have been fairly active in athletics, and you know, see myself at times having this impulse to want my child to get most valuable player rather than some other child, or my child to score the most goals rather than some other child on the team. And what an incredible maturity it would take to really be able to sit back and say, you know, really, wouldn't that be wonderful for that other child to score lots of goals and be the highest scoring person on the team? Wouldn't that be wonderful? When everything in me wants to say, no, I want that to be my child. Now, I could sit back with respect to something else, some other aspect of life, and say, oh, isn't that nice that so-and-so gets such-and-such, that other child gets such-and-such, because I don't value that. That's not important to me. That's not a big deal to me. But when it is a big deal to me, I want my child to have it, not somebody else's child to have it.
Like you could watch the Miss America pageant and be really glad that person got it for beauty.
Yeah.
Because that's not one of your...
That's not a value to me. It's not that important to me. But those things that I...
Come soccer.
When it comes to soccer, that's important to me. And I want my children to get the recognition that I want them to have.
And you know what's interesting, Jack, is there is nothing about you that makes that obvious on the surface. You don't look like somebody who would have that kind of envy or jealousy. You look like you're someone who would say, man, it is great that other kid got it.
Well, see, I know enough that I can say that. I mean, I know enough that I can, I know that that's the appropriate thing to say, that's the appropriate attitude to have, and so I can portray myself that way. And I am committed to it. So, I mean, I really am more mature today than I was 10 years ago. And so...
You really, for example, would be glad for somebody else if they got it. It wouldn't be that you wouldn't prefer your child to have gotten most valuable player, but you really could honestly be glad for this other child.
Well, usually, and for the most part. I mean, that really is something that I recognize ought to be my attitude. and not just the attitude in order to look like a Christian. I mean, I really am committed to that as a value. I want to be the kind of person who would have that perspective. But it does not come gracefully to me. It does not come easily. There is that impulse that I feel inside of me to want to be resentful of the good things that come to other players and the recognition that comes to them. I want that for my children, and I want... And is that selfless? Of course not. You know, I don't want it for my child because I want it for my child. I want it for my child because I want it for me.
That's going to be my next point. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's as obvious to me as could be. That's pretty clear.
Yeah. But I don't think it's always obvious.
I can't hide that from myself. It's just very clear inside of me that that's very selfish. And that's what's motivating me.
I think that happens with a lot of us parents. It isn't that we want so much for our children. It's that we want so much for us because they can be very good reflections on us or very poor reflections on us.
Right.
We'd really love them to be good reflections on us.
I'm not sure that that's very rational of us. Why would the achievements of my child... I mean, I should know that they didn't get their athletic talents for me. So why do I think that it reflects on me?
Yeah, I was wondering, how did your kids get these great athletic talents,
Well,
Jack?
They have a mother who gave them some genes that help.
Well, that's good. they all got those genes, didn't they?
Yeah, they've all done pretty well.
Yeah. Such a fun discussion. We lost where we're going.
Yeah. My point in bringing that up is that I really do think that this is a slow, gradual process of having my whole perspective on reality torqued by the Spirit of God to get me to really see that God doesn't owe me anything. He doesn't owe me any good thing. He doesn't owe me the stuff that I really want. He gives it to me because He's gracious and because He's a wonderful, generous Creator. But if He chooses in His sovereignty to give it to someone else instead, I really need to be able to have the attitude, you know, that really is okay. He's given me so much, and what He's giving me is good and wonderful and rewarding and remarkable. And, you know, what more could I ask for other than the provision that He's given me? It really is quite sufficient. I don't have to have the most. I don't have to be the best. I don't have to have it all in order for me to recognize that God has been very, very gracious and generous to me. But that does not come easily to us.
Why do you think it comes so hard to us?
Well, I think it has to be just a perversion of our nature, because it's not... The strange thing about envy is, it's not just that I want what they have. What I find is all those impulses for them to be hurt instead. One of the things that I've experienced in athletic competition, in soccer, is occasionally parents on the opposing team or the coach of the opposing team or a player on an opposing team, there's something about, you know, they're being arrogant or they're being cocky or they're being obnoxious in some way or the other. And what I find welling up within me is a desire for them not only to lose the game, but to get humiliated. I want them humiliated. Now, that's not merely me wanting a good thing to come to me. That's wanting harm, adversity, some kind of negative thing to happen to another person. There's an edge of cruelty there, an edge of just cruelty there that's just downright perverse. Why would one human being wish adversity on another human being? It doesn't really make any sense. Now, granted, there's probably some obnoxiousness in them that's provoking that attitude in me, but why am I the kind of person that can get provoked to that kind of cruelty?
And that's an important question to ask, because so many times we just look at their obnoxiousness and not ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the question.
Exactly. So it's not just this innocuous kind of self-centeredness that just wants good things to come to me. It's got this awfully, awfully perverse edge to it that wants good things to come to me and humiliation to happen to other people or adversity. And there's something very broken about that, something very evil and wicked about that.
The staff of McKenzie Study Center has written a book on interpreting and understanding the Bible. It is what they call a common sense approach. They believe the Bible communicates God's wisdom to us in normal human language, and this requires us to be good readers. This also means we need to see each of the biblical authors as trying to communicate a particular set of ideas to a particular audience. But this is not always easy. In fact, it's hard work. What is needed is a set of godly principles to guide us in our interpretation. The authors of Biblical Interpretation, A Common Sense Approach, offer a reasonable guide to those principles. Call McKenzie at 541-485-4801 to order your copy.
So back to my question, why is it so hard for us to want good for other people? Your answer was, one, because we're broken. In fact, we're so broken, it's not only that we want good for ourselves, but we want bad for other people. Mm-hmm. And I would say that there's another reason also, and it's really hearkening back on our last program that we were speaking about this, but it's also because I have this sense of worthlessness inside of me that is so profound that I have a sense that in order to feel better, I've got to be at the top. I can't stand not to be at the top. I feel so less than that I do climb to the top. And even if I say that I'm not doing that, very often if we look at my life or the lives of people around us, that's in fact what we are doing. In our own way, we're trying to climb to the top. Now, for you, you wouldn't try to climb to the top for a Miss America pageant. It wouldn't bother you that your children aren't Miss America. And so you could say, look, I'm not that kind of person. But if we looked at another area of your life, like soccer, you're most definitely that kind of person that wants to really climb to the top. And I think it really shows our character. It shows our hearts. It shows what we're made of and what's really going on deep inside of us by the way that we're trying to be first, by our egocentrism.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of the stuff of life is not just saying, okay, I'm going to start treating people right, but that's the right thing to do. But, you know, and just say, it's true that God says other people are as good as me, and so I just need to do that. That's part of what we need to do. But we need to not be blind to the reality, like this example in your life, that I really am being a hurtful person. And I need to look more closely. I need to work that out with fear and trembling, as we said again last week.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that really had a profound impact on me, and this may seem really very strange, but it's just simply true. I don't read much fiction. I just don't. I just have never learned to do that. But one book that I read all the way through, or a series of books I read all the way through, was The Lord of the Rings trilogy by J.R.R. Tolkien. I read it in college, and then later when my kids were young, we would read out loud to them, and we read through that to my children. The thing that, I don't know whether Tolkien intended to do this or not, but what he did, intentionally or unintentionally, is he created a reality there that portrays an important truth about the world. And that is, you don't have to be great to be worth something. You don't have to be the best, you don't have to be the strongest, you don't have to be the most powerful. You can be very ordinary and very plain and very average, but
you
still...
You can just be Bilbo the Hobbit.
Yeah, exactly. These creatures in his book called Hobbits that are, you know, just plain old ordinary, mundane, pedestrian, little average creatures that don't have any significant powers at all, or at least not any obvious and dramatic powers at all. But they still have qualities about them that make them stand out. Their tenacity, their perseverance, their pluck, I guess you could call it. And he portrays them and their world as being, they're just fine with that. They're not wizards, they're not elves, they're not dwarves with all of the the powers and abilities that come with being any of those things. They don't have any of those powers, but they just have their life and enjoy their life that has been given them. And that had a tremendous impact on me because I recognized that really is the view of reality that I need to have. I don't have to be a wizard. I don't have to be an elf. I don't have to be a giant with the strength of a giant to be a significant, worthwhile creature. I can just be a hobbit. You know, I can just be an average pedestrian creature, and it really is okay. And then I can look around the world and look at the elves and the qualities that they have and admire them, and look at the wizards and their magical abilities and admire them for that, and look at these other creatures and admire them for that, and all the time recognize that I am what I am, and that's not nothing either. I can't on any... I'm going to always come in 10th place on any scale that you measure me by, but being consistently 10th place all the time, not many people can do that. It just makes me what I am.
You mean some people, lots of people get first ninth or first.
Yeah.
They don't always get the bottom of the barrel, huh?
Right, right.
It makes you unique.
And there's a certain, I mean, that's what Tolkien allowed me to see, is that uniqueness doesn't have to be greatness. It really is just uniqueness. I am what I am.
And yet...
Go ahead.
Well, I think in your head you really believe that, and that there's areas of your life where that really works out. But look at soccer again.
Right, right.
You can't stand to be 10th place. You want to be first. I mean, it sounds like you don't even want to be second. You want to be first place. You want your kids to be first place. They're for you first place. And so it's really kind of a tricky thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's something that you're really convinced about, and yet when the rubber meets the road in really difficult areas...
These passions inside come well up.
Yeah. They do. They just well up big time.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to act as though they're not there, but they are, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're there for all of us.
Yeah.
In our own little areas.
Right. But sanctification, I think, is just being so captivated by that truth that Tolkien captured in his works. Just being so captivated by that I quell those urges. I say no to them. I mean, they're still there, but I trump them. I say, Jack, that's not the way to think about this. That's not the way to feel about this. That's not the right desire to have. And do as best I can to set it aside and feel and react and think about things differently. That I think is sanctification.
And even if I don't feel differently, I might act differently. You might feel like these obnoxious parents that you want them to be hurt, but you're not acting according to your feelings, you're acting according to your commitment.
Right, exactly.
To doing what's right.
Exactly.
And that's what I think a lot of sanctification is, in terms of how we're changed in relationship to other people. We have a different desire to not hurt other people and to try and care about other people, and are committed enough to that we're working against the natural desire of ourselves to be hurtful or to be first or to be on top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a constant process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're faced with a dilemma. We have passions and urges within us that say, open your mouth and say something cutting and sarcastic to that other parent.
Yes.
And then there's this other urge that says, understand why they are being the way they are being, understand where they're coming from, be kind, be gracious, be loving toward that person. That's what you need to be. That's what you're committed to. And then I have to decide, which am I going to act out of? The passions that are within me or the principle that I'm committed to? And sanctification is being able to more frequently and increasingly choose to act out of the principle I'm committed to rather than that raging passion that's
wanting
there
voice.
That's wanting very much. Wanting voice.
It's
yeah.
demanding voice, and you're trying to put it down. In fact, in that kind of situation, what I might do is call up a friend and say, I'm not going to do this, but I just want to tell you what I want to happen to this person. I just want to be able to voice it just to get it out of my system, so that I don't do it to that person. And oftentimes that's very helpful to me. And then it's out there, or I might write it down, or I, you know, do something to say it's out there, and then act in a good and kind way toward this other person. But man, isn't it a struggle?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a situation in my life right now, Jack, where there is a person who is really, I think, seeing me, they just don't get who I am. They don't understand me. They don't like who I am. They don't think that what I value is good. They don't think Christianity is a good thing. They don't think that I am a person that works at looking at life on a different level, in a different way than they do, is good. They see life so incredibly different than me. And in ways that the way that they see life, I don't particularly value. They see life in terms of being very social, just kind of living from day to day and accumulating things and having a lot of money and having a lot of people that admire them. And they see me as really weird. I mean, really weird. And they don't like me. And it's, I want this person to like me. It's an important person in my life. But they don't. And what I want to do is just say really bad things about them. Kind of like with these soccer people. It's like, you know, your life is so shallow. And don't you know that you're just a phony? You know, those are things that come up. And what I'm saying to them in essence in my heart is I'm better than you. And it's really easy for me to believe that, to really think that I am better than them. And even if I don't tell them that in big ways, like I can really hold myself back, but I can kind of shoot little things at them. I can, in a very clever or subtle way, give them this idea that I'm better than them in ways that they could never really counter because it's not straight on enough. You know what I'm talking about?
I can imagine.
Yeah. You can imagine because you could do it?
Oh, I'm sure I could, yeah.
You're sure you could or you have?
Oh, I'm sure I
have. Might
admit
it. Okay. Those are just really tough situations in life. And that's where we really need to work at it. And recognize that it's not going to be easy, but it's just a struggle that we're going to have to keep at maybe our whole life.
Okay, that raises a question that let me pose to you. But as we read the Bible, I mean, you were saying, I could see myself as better than this person.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you better than that person? Given what you've just simply described, isn't your view of reality and your value system and the things that you're committed to, it sounds to me like your commitments are a better set of commitments than this other person.
Well, there's a difference between my set of commitments and my humanness.
Okay.
And that's what really has to be kept straight, because it's easy to look externally. And that's what I'm doing, is I'm looking at our different commitments. And I do think that what I'm committed to is very valuable. But I can really fall into the trap of thinking that person is less valuable than me because they don't have the same commitments that God talks about in the Bible. God talks about, for example, really working at trying to be merciful toward other people and to make people a priority, to love them. This other person doesn't make people a priority. They make having stuff a priority. And those are different. Those are things that are, that's not valuable to God, to make stuff a priority. It is valuable to God to make love a priority. So yeah, that's a good thing that I'm trying to pursue. But I just can't get away from, Jack, that they are a human being that God made, and He made them in. That's the way it is. They do have value, period. I don't care what their commitments are. They do, and that's how I need to see them.
And so one of the things that you're avoiding is drawing the conclusion that the reason that I have come to have the commitments that I have is because I'm inherently and intrinsically a better person than that other person. That's a very easy conclusion for us to draw,
yeah.
But it would be false.
It's false because The reason that I have these commitments are because God gave them to me.
Yeah.
And I can't give any other explanation to that. I shouldn't have these any more than that person should have. I can't even give an explanation of why I do, other than God gave me that gift. That is a total gift.
So it's nothing for you to boast in that God gave you that gift, because it was just a gift.
You're leading me along well.
Yeah.
But you can see how it's so hard. It's so easy to make that transition into I'm better than, because I'm doing things the way God would want me to do them. And that's evil. That's wrong. That's bad. But, you know, I know that this person would say to me, and they have said to me, you don't think I have any value, speaking of themselves. And I think that they get that in part because of my bad choices in communicating them to them in subtle and not so subtle ways that I'm better than them. But it's also because I really don't value what they value, and it's hard to make that distinction with people. How do you, in a very mundane way, say on one hand, you are a valuable person that I really do love and want, I really do want good for this person underneath it all, or maybe on top of it all too, but I don't value what they value and I can't go in their direction. And the fact that I'm not doing that is very, it makes them angry.
Yeah.
It's very offensive to them. And it doesn't matter if I say anything or not, I'm just doing different stuff in my life. And that is a real thorn in their flesh. And they see it as a huge rejection. I can't hardly talk about anything to them about my life. I can't talk because my talk comes out of my values. And it's so different than theirs, that they're always seeing me as not valuing them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you communicate that? I don't know if you can, that I value them, that it would be believable.
Right. I do think there comes a point where you reach a kind of impasse that is really an unsolvable impasse apart from the grace of God. I think we're really at a societal level, we're experiencing that today, because increasingly what our society is concluding is that Christianity is hateful. I mean, at the political, social-political level,
mm-hmm.
Religious perspectives, Christian perspective in particular, is being seen as a kind of philosophy of hate. Well, what a strange thing to conclude, except that to the extent that we will not embrace what other people want to be embraced for, we are rejecting them. So for Christianity to say, for example, that homosexuality is sin and is an offense against God, when you have people who've decided in their own minds, my homosexuality is part of my identity, to love me is to love my homosexuality. When they have decided that, then to reject their homosexuality is to reject them. And so they're going to construe it as hatred, and then very understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really objectively hatred? No, it's not at all. But
it sure does make sense.
But
that
it's
they
lost
see
on
it
them.
That way. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does make sense that they see it that way. And there's, where do you go with that? It's just, what they want is for us just to give in and say, you're right, I'm just being hateful if I don't accept that identity that you're carrying. But for us, for me, it would be giving up the most basic of what I believe in and what I mean, not just the homosexuality question, but even the question of that I was talking about with this person, of going along with just a social have things life is really the best way to live. I can't do that.
Right.
I can understand that they would do that. It makes sense to me that they would do that. It makes sense to me why a homosexual would be a homosexual. It makes huge sense to me. But I can't go there.
Right. Jesus had that very dilemma in mind, I think, when he said, unless you hate father, mother, wife, children, I can't remember who else was on the list, and come after me, you cannot be my disciple. I think what he had in mind is, inevitably, there comes a point in our life when the commitments of those who are not disciples of Jesus force them to invest themselves in things that I that ought not to be invested in by a human being. It's just simply wrong-headed. It's foolish. It's worldly. It's antagonistic to God. And when they invest themselves there, and I refuse to be invested in that, they will inevitably construe my rejection of their investment as a rejection of them.
Yes,
they will
construe
it as hatred.
Right. Yeah. It's very personal. And I have to say, Jack, that in thinking about this, it's scary to me. I think that we as Christians are really need to make this distinction in our own hearts and our own minds about what is right behavior, what are the values and commitments I need to have, and go toward those, and understand that other people are as valuable as I am. We really, really, really need to get that, because we're going to buckle otherwise and give up what's most important. We're going to go along with the culture and say, well, you know, you're right. Maybe I am just being unloving. We need to get what loving really is about, and it isn't about just giving up our own commitments. But I think we're going to have a lot of persecution. I just can't see that we're going to avoid that.
Right.
And that's, you know, it's interesting. I was reading the newspaper last week, and it was talking about our local newspaper was doing a five-day series on religious freedom. And talking, I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't notice it.
They were talking about, well, Jack, it was on the front page.
I only read the sports page.
Oh, okay. Soccer part.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, religious freedom and how that's so important and how our government is trying to really encourage that around the nations around the world. And I thought, how ironic, because I experience so much less religious freedom in this realm than I ever have. And I think that it will be increasingly less, there'll be less freedom. And not that people, and I think they'll voice, we want to give religious freedom, but they won't understand this.
Right, exactly.
And we will have less freedom from it.
Because really what we're talking about is the basic fundamental conflict between light and darkness, between truth and folly. John, in his letter in 1 John, talks about Cain, who killed his brother Abel. And why did he kill him? Because his deeds were evil and his brother's were righteous. I mean, it's just there's nothing rational about it. Hmm. There's nothing even pragmatic about it. There's just this kind of irrational hostility on the part of foolishness for wisdom, falsehood, lies for truth. The fact that somebody is committed to the truth brings my commitment to falsehood into condemnation. And out of my sense of condemnation, I hate the person who's the catalyst for my feeling condemned. And, you know, there's nothing you can do about that, except, as you say, to buckle and say, okay, well, I'll be committed to a lie also. I'll tell you that it's all right to be committed to a lie. Well, how can I do that? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's certainly a fundamental compromising of my faith to do that. But what complicates it is the other thing that we were talking about is, am I pure of so separating their commitment to falsehood from my sense of contempt for them as a person, mm-hmm. that they're not feeling something on my part that's really inappropriate? Well, of course I'm not. I'm fully capable of being.
And that's part of what they're feeling.
That's
part
of
what they're experiencing.
Yeah.
Even in my best efforts. I mean, there are some issues that don't really make my hackles go up. Like, I don't have a particularly difficult time with homosexuality. It's just not something it's so easy for me to understand. It's so much a part of what I see in so many people's lives. It's so much a part. It's not that I think it's good or it's right, but it just doesn't raise my hackles. But so I think I could communicate to a homosexual a lot more, I can be more generous toward them than I could, for example, towards somebody who is just given over to a social life that has to do with drinking every night and having lots of stuff and just not valuing looking at anything in life but the very, very surface of things. That just happens to be a very, very difficult thing for me. And so with those people, my contempt will come out more. My struggle to not be contemptuous, my struggle to not be hurtful toward those people is much greater.
all kinds of our experiences in the past will come to play here, but our struggles are going to be very individual in that regard. One thing that really bugs me will not bother you, and vice versa. The thing that really sets me off is lying. And I'm not sure why. I don't know why that's such a big deal to me, but it's very difficult for me to not hold in contempt people who play fast and loose with the truth. That really bothers me in a way that the kind of superficiality that you're talking about doesn't. I mean, I don't respect it, but
it doesn't punch any buttons for me. Right. But even what I'm thinking is, with where our buttons are punched, that's where we really need to be hard on working, mm-hmm. to work against the contempt that we feel, and actually, and be honest with ourselves and honest with the people around us, you know. And that's really hard. It's very humbling for me to say to somebody who already thinks I'm a jerk, because I don't agree with them, and because we've already maybe had a hard time, and I think I'm on higher ground, for me to say, you know, I really did blow it in the way I related to you. Because they're going to say, aha, see, you are that awful person that I thought you were. And
they're right.
They're right. They're right, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
To be branded that. And also then what they're doing is they're throwing out all the good stuff. And it's, this life thing is hard.
Yeah, it is. What you're saying, and something you said earlier, if I could come back to that, it raises an interesting question that maybe we could pursue. I think you mentioned earlier that when you're torn between acting and behaving and thinking towards someone according to what you're committed to versus what these impulses inside of you, they want to have voice given to them. To call a friend, I think you said, or to write, mm-hmm. write something in it, maybe a journal or something, but mm-hmm. to give voice to those passions in that way. I could see some people saying, oh, now, wait a minute, that's slander, that's gossip, that's, I don't know what they would call it, but surely that would not be a healthy and right and good thing to do. How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I think it's implicit, but I would never send this writing to the other person or call the person that I have contempt for. I just wouldn't do that.
Right. That was your whole purpose in talking to someone else.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it could be gossip. I can address that first. If I'm talking to another person, and both of us know this third person that I'm talking about, it could be that I'm trying to gossip and bring my friend on my side. I mean, I think that's a real possibility. So I think, you know, a really helpful thing to do with in that case is not to talk to somebody about that person that knows them also. That can be very helpful. So I'm not gossiping. Like if I'm talking to you about a friend of mine in California, well, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't help me to.
I don't relate to them ever anyway, so.
It doesn't, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a helpful thing to keep in mind when we're talking to another person.
Mm-hmm.
So your objection of gossip, it can be. I don't know what, seems like there's another objection. It could be, is that just a bad thing to do? Could it just, bad for what reason?
Well, I don't know. I can just hear a lot of Christians thinking or being skeptical that, I think what it comes down to is going that public, being out there, being that upfront about, you know, the dirty laundry inside, that doesn't seem right. And I think, and the reason I'm asking you is because I think what you're saying, and I would agree with it, is that, no, that's very right. If it's there, it's there. Is it shameful? Yeah. I mean, that you're acknowledging that, presumably to the person that you're talking to. You're acknowledging, look at these shameful emotions that I'm having and perspectives that I'm having here. But I'm having them. I mean, this is what I'm struggling with. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling. This is really there.
Okay, so that clarifies it better for me. It isn't that I'm going to this other person or writing thinking, okay, I'm just going to justify this anger. I'm just going to see what a creep this other person is, and I want you to agree with me that this person is a creep. Now, that's just, boy, that's just rationalization of my own sin.
Yeah.
But if I just am being honest about the reality, I don't like this. This is in me. Look at what's here. But it's here. And what actually happens is, when I'm talking to another person or writing it down, I have more clarification in myself about what's going on. It actually helps me come around to loving the person better. And part of that is just because I'm seeing more clearly, I'm understanding things better. But also, it's kind of like takes the edge off my anger, and I can look underneath it.
Yeah.
And that helps me a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that we probably don't have time to pursue this, but... and maybe in the future we can do this, but I think oftentimes our view of gossip is kind of uninformed and not doesn't show a lot of understanding, because some people's concept of gossip is to ever say anything negative about another person is forbidden by the truth and by the Christianity. No, it's not. Gossip is what the Bible is saying is we are evil enough and cruel enough that we try to slander other people, put other people in a bad light unfairly and unjustly, and get advantage over them by using information and facts and so on in their social relationships. That's wrong. But if you and I are talking about a character flaw in another person, that is not in and of itself wrong. It's negative. I mean, we're saying that there are bad qualities to that other person, but that can be incredibly beneficial for us to together grow in wisdom and understanding as we see an example of sin in the life of another person
and discuss it. And discuss it between us and maybe relate to that person better.
Yeah, exactly.
To love them better.
In a more understanding way.
Now, and yeah, that's very, very helpful. I want to go back to something I said, and that's that I think that we need to talk about issues in our lives. We need to be able to get out the anger, and it needs to not just be, you get on my side, you get on my bandwagon and see how mad I am at this person and be mad at them with me. But Jack, it could start that way. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a situation this weekend where I was so angry at one of my kids, and I just like belted on him with my husband, just told my husband everything I was mad about, and then I softened up.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to not stay there. Sometimes it starts there, and it needs to go away from that. But I have that as a commitment in my mind, that I don't want to just be mean and angry toward people. I want to grow. I want to understand. I want to get beyond it. And that's part of the process.
Yeah.
It's a tough, bumpy process.
And if we're in the role of your husband in that situation, our job is to help them get perspective, help the other person get perspective, and put their anger in the larger perspective that allows them to get...
Well, sometimes it's just that the other person, my husband, just shuts up and lets
and listens.
Me go through
sure.
the process.
Sure.
Gives me a safe place just to hear it.
Sure.
He doesn't give me a lot of wisdom. He's just hearing it, and I think he thinks I'm going to come around, and I do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of just shutting up on
sure.
the part of the other person.
Sure. But the thing that we don't do is encourage them to stay self-centered.
That's right.
Yeah.
Eventually, over time, we help them go there.
Yeah.
30 seconds. Can you tell me what we talked about today, Jack? Well, I'll tell us what we talked
okay.
about today. We can't say a whole lot because we only have 30 seconds, but what we were talking about is that part of our sanctification, part of how God changes us when we become believers, is we become people who have a growing understanding of other people. We take ourselves from the center of the universe, and we start seeing other people as important as ourselves. And that's part of what God's doing in our life.
At the end of this century, the big questions about reality and being human rise with unexpected power. We ask, ever more agonizingly, what does it mean to be human? How do human beings fit into this vast cosmos? Where to from here? In his Muse and Views article, Postmodernism, A New Model of Reality, Mackenzie Study Center member Wes Hurd shows how our present-day culture answers these questions in radically non-biblical ways. He shows how the prevalent postmodern view of life is fed to us through television, popular music, and education.
However, he also states that although postmodernism has many negative aspects, it may present opportunities for biblical Christians to dialogue more openly with people who need real answers to some big questions. Call Mackenzie at 541-485-4801 for your free News and Views article, Postmodernism, a New Model of Reality.
To continue to sustain this program, we need financial support from our radio listeners. And the last part of this program, for the last several weeks, we've been asking people for financial support. We're going to continue to do that again today. One of the things that has been very heartwarming to me, and I believe also to you and to the whole board at Christianity at Work, have been numerous letters that we've received from people talking to us about the benefit of Christianity at Work in their own lives. I think I'd like to read a letter. Thank you for your letter and being so open about the challenges that faced you in your marriage, the impact of expectations, the lack of understanding surrounding the area of sexuality. Your analogy of a dancer helped to send the message home. I greatly appreciate your conversation-style program. I hear your program at 6:30 on Saturday morning, and though it's the only day I have to sleep in, your class is simply too rich to miss. So there I am, preparing my notebook and making that morning cup of coffee, so when you begin, your student is prepared. When I hear you and Jack speak about your experiences on various subjects, I can't help but wonder how long it will take God to restore the years the locusts have eaten in my life. I've been a Christian for almost 2 years, and as a middle-aged woman, I continue to feel the burden of years of loss to sinful behavior, particularly in the area of sexuality. In fact, I would say, since becoming a Christian, the weight of sin seems heavier than ever. Why is that? Recently, the sin of shame visited me again with increased weight and tried to steal from me the hope promised in Jesus. A part of me wants to pour out the struggles I've endured as a divorced single parent, but I hold back. I hope as your series continues, you will speak to those new Christians who struggle to regain ground stolen by the enemy. I appreciate your program very much and will pray that God bless you abundantly as Christianity at Work grows in its ministry. God bless.
I share her hope that we can reach into the obscure corners of society and our nation to people who are struggling with those very issues and can be helpful. That's why we are here on the air. That's why we want to be on the air, so that we can do what we can to help people understand their faith in a way that's very helpful.
We're trying really hard to make our Christianity meet the practical issues of our life, to not just make it something that goes on in our head, but something that really walks in the shoes of our life. We need support to help us continue to do this ministry, and so we are beseeching our radio listening audience, if you are interested in helping us continue, we ask that you consider giving financially to support our program.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The Mackenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the Mackenzie staff through classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The Mackenzie Study Center is a nonprofit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to Mackenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to call and request a free taped copy of today's program, the telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of Mackenzie Study Center, Thank you for listening.